Accession number 18457, Reel 2.
Roy Wheeler, Reel 2. You were just telling me about the conditions on the march.
Yes. We had to make, as I say, we had to vary the length of the distance that we had to go each day because of the mules wanting the water. And, of course, this varied from 10 miles to perhaps 20, 18, 20 some days. So a lot of marching. We marched nearly every day except when we were told that we were going to put on the Blackpool block, which was the one that overlooked the main railway and road leading up to from Mandalay to Michinar.
So to start off with, you made your way towards Blackpool?
Yes. Well, we decided that we were going to put on the big block. So we used to put road blocks on. If there was traffic coming up or any of the Japanese trucks with ammunition or men in, we'd wait at the side and either blow the road or the bridge and stop that. But that was hit and run sort of thing. We wouldn't stay there. We'd just do it and run. But when we came to the Blackpool block, which is called Blackpool block, that's the name they gave it, it was intended to hold that for 10 days, which wasn't easy because the Japs were more or less all round it. And we were supposed to stop the Japs from coming up on the road, the main road, the Mandalay Road, and the railway, which we did. We overlooked it. We got on the hill and overlooked it, but eventually we were limited. We had a lot of casualties there because they were mortaring it like hell, because they couldn't miss the spot where we were. But we held it for nearly 3 weeks. And then...
So you were in the defence of Blackpool for 3 weeks?
Yes. 3 weeks, just under 3 weeks. I think it was 18 days, 19 days. We held it and we did the job we were intended to do. But then we were eventually chased out.
What were conditions like in the siege of Blackpool?
Terrible. We had a little airstrip and we were getting the occasional plane in, light plane to bring us some food, but they had to be very careful because every time the plane landed, the Japs would be there ready to blow it up. So we held it for just under 3 weeks, and then.
Were you acting as an infantryman?
Yes, yes, yeah. Well, we were. we were overlooking, as it were, the main road and railway, and we were bombarding that with hand grenades and God knows what, anything at all to stop them from using it. Which we did, but then they must have got together and decided, well, this is enough, and they got another load of Japs up and moved us out. And then by this time we had probably 40, 50 wounded that we had to get out, so we took them out with us.
Well, did you spend your time in Blackpool in slit trenches then?
Yes, yeah, slit trenches.
Did you have to sleep in them?
Yes.
What were conditions like in the slit?
Terrible. Terrible.
Did the Japanese get right up to your slit trench?
We were on the other side. The airstrip was on the hill, and they were on the other side of the hill. But we had to take it in turns and move round and go to the other side, probably every other day, and do our share of bombarding the Japs that side, you see. And also unloading the plane if you got one in with food in, because we had no food supplies then, you see.
So you were doing a lot of mortaring?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they were mortaring us too. They were cracked shot through the mortar. That's where we had a lot of casualties. In fact, the centre of the block where the officers were, the commanding officer, had a direct hit, and we had a big burial there. A lot of the officers were killed.
Did you have to withstand any Japanese infantry attacks?
Yes.
What were they like?
Pretty grim. But it was a steep side to where they were trying to get up. And all we were doing was just throwing the grenades over. So we hear them screaming.
Were there any prisoners taken on either side?
No, but there was one or two. No, we didn't take any. Well, we couldn't take prisoners, really. No, we were sort of hit and run brigade. You know, we couldn't take prisoners.
Did you catch a glimpse of the Japanese?
Oh yes, yes, many occasions. But we avoided them where we could because, as I say, we hadn't got the heavy stuff to fight them really. In that sense, you know, stand and fight. We were sort of hit and run, blow a bridge and run, and blow a road and run. And
but at Blackpool, when you were defending Blackpool,
well, that was the big block. That was the main big road block. That was the main road. You see, these others were only minor roads like tracks that they were using to bring up ammunition.
Were you having to keep the Japanese off Blackpool by machine gun fire?
Yeah, we had machine gun, grenades, anything at all we could keep them off with, you know. But say at the last, I forget the date now, I did have it down, but they came across the this little airstrip. There were thousands of them, and they just chased us out, so we went like mad up the hill. And we marched for about 17 miles, I think it was, 16, 17 miles with the wounded. And we got to the Ndozi Lake. And they got a Sunderland flying boat down on the lake. They took the wounded out.
What did you think of the Japanese enemy yourself at that time?
Not much, really. In what way? They were just
what
enemy.
Were they like as fighters?
Well, I don't think they were very good at fighting. Because in the block there was a steep side. And they could have come round the side and surrounded us, but they didn't. They stopped up this same steep and they were trying to get up the steep side. All we were doing was just lobbing grenades over and we'd hear them screaming. So we didn't think they were very intelligent at that time. But then they did eventually come round the sides and chase us out. We had to get out. We had a lot of casualties there, and wasn't many of us really.
And so you went from Blackpool to Lake Ndoji?
The Ndoji Lake. We got the wounded there and got them on board and got them out. And then we carried on and did our usual small bridges. By this time, we were getting a bit tired. This is getting towards the fifth month then. And then I think they had another two bridges. We had another two bridges to blow. And I got the jungle sores in my legs with going through water, across the lakes and whatnot. No chance to change his socks, so my feet was in a pretty bad state. the MO decided that I should be sent out, so there was about 30 of us that weren't fit to do any more. So we marched out of Burma onto the 35th milestone, I'll always remember that, and we were picked up there by jeeps, by the Yanks.
So you left from Burma from the 35th milestone?
We marched there. But then, only a week after that, it was all over. It was finished.
What were these jungle sores like?
Oh, terrible. And I had no skin on my feet at all. I was in a terrible state. And I came home, I came out with the Yanks. And they took us down to this sort of depot that they had. They put us on a little boat, an outboard, about eight of us, I think, with these sores. Put us on this boat with an outboard motor and went down the river, and there was an ambulance waiting. Took us to the plane, and we were on a plane back to India. And I went straight into hospital, and I was there for about 3 weeks.
Did you make a full recovery?
Yeah. When I say full recovery, I had sore feet when I came home. For a long time with the heat. When the summer came, they were in a terrible state. And there was a doctor in Neston, Dr. Selby, who specialised in tropical diseases and this. And he said to me, now what he wants you to do is put your feet every night in methylated spirits. Have a bowl of methylated spirits, put your feet in. And, you know, I did that for about a month. I've never had any trouble since. Wonderful.
What treatment had you got in India for it?
They used to bathe it with something every day, but I'm afraid that there was never the same. I had trouble even with the army socks after that. I was never the same.
Were the sores on your feet?
Yeah, I mean between my toes and legs. You get all sorts of out of the muddy water that you walk through, you see. See, normally if you went through water, you'd sit down and change your shoes, but you had no time to do that. So you had to carry on walking in wet socks, in army boots, so you can imagine how your feet were. Just push the skin off.
So when you soaked them in methylated spirits, did you just let it evaporate?
Yeah, just let them in, and I used to stay in it for about 20 minutes, quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, and then take them out and dry them. And by that method, they went hard. I've never had any trouble since.
Dry them with a towel, you mean?
Yeah. Well, I forget what my wife used to do them, with something, towel or something.
Did you get malaria or any other disease?
Three times. I had malaria before. I'd only been in India. First time I got it was in Ceylon. In a very short time. And then I had it again in India. But they put us on tablets. A course of tablets for about a month before we went into Burma. So I had a lot of the lads did. Because, if you got it in there, like, it was a bad job. Because, I mean, you know, if you march in the column, you had to march every day. If you dropped out, like, you couldn't stop and sit with you. You had to keep going. But we had a course of tablets before we went in. Mepicrin tablets and something else we had. And I fortunately kept it down while I was in. I had no trouble at all, but a lot of them did. Elephantitis and the feet they used to get. That's a terrible thing, that. Various other diseases some of the lads had. But fatigue was the thing, you know, to keep marching every day was really something. And then, as I say, you went days without food and days without water. We were cutting pieces out of banana trees to keep your mouth moist. That's how we used to keep it. No water, you see. And then when you finally found water, of course the mules would go mad.
Did you have any trouble with the mules?
No. They were very, very good. They couldn't have found a better animal to carry the loads of stuff that we had, you know, well, the wireless and ammunition and various other things they carried. No, they were very good. Fortunately, a lot of them slipped over the side of hills that we, you know, hills that we go around the side of hills, and they'd slip and you'd watch the poor mule roll down and knew that it had been killed.
Did you have to handle the mules yourself?
No, they had muleteers. Oh, they were our own lads, but they were trained up with the mules and during the training period, trained to handle them, and they were muleteers, they stayed with them. Each had their own mule.
Did you have any contact with the Burmese population?
Only when we went into the villages. But you had to be very careful because some of them were the Japs and some were with us. So we always, before we went into a village, we always sent a recce in. What we had, we had some Burmese recce with us. So they were in our uniform, Burmese. But before we went into a village, they used to change into the saris and walk in as if they were locals. And they'd come back and they'd say, well, there's about 40 Japs in there. So, and if there were too many for us, we wouldn't touch it. But there was nobody in. We'd go into the village and probably the locals would give you rice or something like that. You know. But other than that, you couldn't trust them. See, there's trouble there now with the Burmese.
What was discipline like in 41 column in Burma?
Very strict. Very strict.
Did anybody have to be punished?
Yes. I've seen If I tell you this, you won't believe it. I've seen British troops tied to a tree and flogged with an officer for pinching rations.
Do you think they deserved it?
Not really, but it was regarded as a serious offence because you would go... You see, we were supposed to get supplies every 5 days. This was the original plan. But if you were right on top of Japs, you couldn't possibly have a supply drop. So you might go 10 days. Well, as soon as you got the drop, so many men would be detailed to go picking the parcels up. These come down by parachute. They're in a box about that size. They'd have to be detailed to bring all these boxes together into one central place, stack them up, and then they would be distributed evenly. Well, instead of them doing that, they were opening the boxes as soon as they got their hands on them and pinching the rations, you see. Found out, and that was the... We were told that before we went in. If you pound pinching rations, you'd be flogged. And the officer, I've actually seen, witnessed that being done. Now, a lot of people wouldn't believe that, but it's true.
How much damage do you think you did to the Japanese with your column?
Oh, I think we did. We did a good job considering we were under very difficult conditions. And any road or bridge or anything at all that was a help to the Japs, we blew. And I'm sure that we delayed stuff going up to the northern end of Burma, where the 3rd Indian Div were fighting, weren't they, up there? We stopped the supplies there. Oh, yes, we did a lot of damage. I'm sure we did.
Did the explosives work properly?
Oh, yes. Yes.
How do you feel now about having served in the Chindits?
All right. I'm probably one of the lucky ones. I could say 100% fit. I don't have any relapses of malaria or... any illnesses at all, really.
Are you proud of being a Chindit?
I am, yes.
Was there ever any use of booby traps by the Chindit?
Yes, we had, I would say, a special booby trap, which was a 303 bullet, fitted with a umbrella catch, which meant that when we got in after marching all day, two or three of us would be detailed to go back along the track about half a mile or so and press into the track the 303 bullet, which meant that if the Japanese came along and then stood on it, immediately went off and came out through the knee. That is what it was intended to do. Now, whether this was something, a bullet that was devised particularly for our operation, or whether it was something that had been used before, I wouldn't know. But that's what we had in the form of a booby trap.
Do you think they worked?
Well, I'm sure they worked, because sometimes in the night we'd hear them going off and we knew that the Japs were then coming along the same track. So we feel sure that they did work.
Did you lay them yourself?
Yes. I went back on several occasions to lay the bullet into the umbrella, with the umbrella catch, into the track after we got into Harvey at night.
I think there was one occasion when you got shot up by Spitfires.
Yes, that was that was when we were going into this Burmese village, and we had been informed that there was quite a considerable amount of Japs in there. But and we decided that we would, before we went in, that we would get the mortar to platoon. We'd make arrangements with the Spitfires, and we'd make arrangements with the mortar platoon to fire a smoke bomb into the village, which would then give direction to the Spitfires so they could really machine gun it. So we went down to the village, and unfortunately, there was no Japs in there, so we all marched into the village. And unfortunately, the smoke bomb was still fired, which meant that the Spitfires come. So we were under considerable fire from our own Spitfires. And unfortunately, we lost a few men there, which was purely accidental. But I understand that the officer that made this grave mistake was court-martialed eventually.
Did you have an arrow scout then?
I was behind a tree sitting on an ammunition box with a friend, but unfortunately they missed us.